everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. Today, we are tackling the story of King Nebuchadnezzar.
Oh, this is a good one.
Yeah, it's a story that's like thousands of years old, but it still feels, you know, strangely relevant.
Oh, for sure.
We're talking about the guy who built the Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
And his wild ride of, like, pride, downfall, and an unexpected comeback?
Yeah, yeah.
So to help us unpack all this, we have our expert here with us today.
Happy to be here.
And our main source is a lecture by Old Testament scholar Dr. Wendy Witter.
Excellent source.
So get ready, because this one's a roller coaster. What always gets me about this story is how it starts. You have Nebuchadnezzar at the peak of his power, praising God, the Most High, as he calls him.
Right.
For all the amazing things that he's seen.
It's amazing, right?
It's like even this mighty king recognized there was something bigger than himself out there.
Exactly. It's like when people, even those who aren't particularly religious, find themselves saying, like, thank God when they've, you know, dodged a bullet.
Right.
There's something about facing the unknown that makes us acknowledge a force beyond our control.
Yes. But here's the thing. Nebuchadnezzar then has this, like, super vivid and really disturbing dream about a magnificent tree getting, like, chopped down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if I were him, I'd be freaking out too, right?
Definitely. Especially in the ancient world where dreams were seen as, like, these messages from the divine.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just a bad dream. It's a warning.
Oh, for sure.
And trees, I mean, they were huge symbols back then.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Think, like, stability, prosperity, you know, the king's provision for his people, like a giant oak supporting an entire ecosystem.
Right, right, yeah. So he calls in his dream team, like all his advisors, you know, the wise guys, and they're stumped.
Yeah.
That's kind of surprising, isn't it? I mean, these guys were supposed to be, you know, like the best of the best.
Right. Well, that's where Daniel comes in. And his reaction to the dream is, well, it's what really struck me.
Okay.
He isn't just, you know, calmly interpreting. Some translations describe him as terrified. I think this speaks to a possible bond between Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay.
You know, it's not just professional. He genuinely cares for the king.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see what you mean. It's like, you know, seeing a friend heading for disaster and knowing you have to be the one to break the bad news to them.
Yeah, exactly.
But Daniel does deliver the interpretation. And there are some interesting differences between his account and Nebuchadnezzar's original telling of the dream.
Right.
Daniel leaves out the part about the tree's great height and it being in the, quote, middle of the earth. What's going on there?
Hmm. That's where we start seeing the subtle hints of Nebuchadnezzar's pride.
Okay.
It's like he's exaggerating, you know, puffing himself up a bit. Daniel, by omitting those details, might be gently nudging him towards a more realistic view of himself.
That's interesting. But he also doesn't repeat the part about Nebuchadnezzar losing his mind and becoming like a wild animal. Maybe he was just trying to, like, spare the king's feelings.
Perhaps. I mean, just imagine, you know, having your therapist tell you you're going to go crazy and live like a beast for 7 years.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Talk about adding insult to injury. But it also makes me wonder if Daniel realized the king was already, like, shaken enough by the overall message.
Right, yeah. And then there's this weird gap. Daniel interprets the dream, but, like, a whole year passes before anything actually happens.
Yeah.
Why the delay?
That is a great question. And it gets at the heart of how we understand God's actions in the story.
Okay.
Is it a period of grace? A chance for Nebuchadnezzar to change his ways? Or is it, you know, more like a test, a way of seeing if he's truly learned his lesson?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Last time we have Nebuchadnezzar in, well, pretty rough spot.
Yeah.
Stripped of his power, sanity's gone, living like a wild animal. I mean, talk about a fall from grace.
Right. But, you know, this story isn't just about a king, like, losing it all. It's about what happens after that.
Right.
And that's where things get really interesting. What strikes me is that the text doesn't really sugarcoat anything. It describes Nebuchadnezzar's transformation in, like, detail. Hair like eagle's feathers, nails like bird's claws. It's meant to be jarring, to make us, like, feel the full weight of his humiliation.
Yeah, it's definitely not a PG version of events. It's almost like a cautionary tale, right? A reminder that even, you know, the mightiest can fall. But, like, amidst all this darkness, there's a glimmer of hope. Nebuchadnezzar, he does eventually recover.
He does.
And his comeback is just as dramatic as his downfall.
It really is. And it's not just like a physical, a mental recovery. It's a complete shift in his understanding of the world, of his place in it.
Yeah.
He, like, literally lifts his eyes to heaven and acknowledges the power of the Most High God.
It's like that time he spent living as a beast, just, like, stripped away all of his arrogance, all those illusions of grandeur. He's forced to confront his own, you know, vulnerability, his dependence on something bigger than himself.
And here's where this story, at least for me, takes a turn that I find both surprising and incredibly insightful. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't convert to Judaism.
Okay.
He doesn't denounce his Babylonian gods or, you know, become like a card-carrying follower of Yahweh. But something really profound happens. He recognizes that his authority as king comes from God. It's not his own inherent greatness.
Right.
You know, it's a gift. It's a responsibility.
Yeah, he goes from boasting about, you know, his mighty power to praising God for, you know, his justice and righteousness.
It's a complete 180. Right. And it's even more powerful when you consider that Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar's empire, becomes this, like, symbol of human arrogance and opposition to God in, you know, later parts of the Bible.
Yeah.
So to see him, the, like, embodiment of Babylon, humbled and acknowledging God's sovereignty, that's a huge statement.
Yeah. It's like the author is using Nebuchadnezzar, this, you know, larger-than-life figure, to make a point about the limits of human power. No matter how great we think we are, we're ultimately accountable to something beyond ourselves. And it makes you wonder, how did the Jewish exiles living under Nebuchadnezzar's rule react to this story?
Now, that is a fascinating question. Imagine being in their shoes. You know, this king, the one who destroyed your temple, uprooted your lives, is now proclaiming the greatness of your God.
Right.
Talk about mixed emotions. It must have been, like, confusing, maybe even a little bit hopeful.
It makes me think about those times when we see, you know, something good come out of a situation that seemed utterly hopeless.
Right.
It's a reminder that even in, like, the darkest of circumstances, there's always that possibility for, you know, change, for redemption.
Absolutely. And this idea of, you know, unexpected transformations, of seeing, like, a higher power at work in, you know, seemingly random events, this is a recurring theme throughout the book of Daniel.
It's a theme that speaks to something deep within us, yeah. Right? Our capacity for both, you know, incredible arrogance and profound humility. But this deep dive is far from over, and we still need to unpack what this story means for us today. What can we learn from Nebuchadnezzar's journey about power, pride, and the true meaning of humility? Stick with us as we explore these questions and more in the final part of our deep dive into Daniel 4. All right, welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into Daniel 4. We've journeyed with Nebuchadnezzar from, like, the heights of power all the way down to the depths of despair, and then, well, you know, back again.
Yep, oh, quite a journey.
But, you know, this isn't just an ancient tale, is it?
No, definitely not. It's got something to say to all of us today, even thousands of years later.
Yeah, what do you think is, like, the, I don't know, the biggest takeaway, the what kind of sticks with you?
For me, it's how it challenges those, you know, neat little boxes we try to put people in when it comes to faith.
Right. Yeah, that's what really got me, too. I mean, here you have Nebuchadnezzar, a pagan king, and he experiences this profound spiritual transformation. He doesn't, you know, follow all the rules. He doesn't, like, formally convert. But you can't deny that something shifted in him.
Exactly. It really kind of throws a wrench into the idea that God only works through people who fit a certain mold.
It really does. It's like a reminder that God's plans are, well, they're bigger and way more mysterious than we can fully grasp. It really makes me think, how often do we limit our understanding of God by trying to, you know, stuff him in a box?
That's such a good point. It's so easy to fall into that trap of thinking, well, God only works through people who look like me or think like me.
Right.
You know, people who believe the same things. But Nebuchadnezzar's story, it really blows that whole idea out of the water.
It really does. So speaking of, you know, mind-blowing, let's get back to Nebuchadnezzar's experience. I mean, it's one thing to just acknowledge, you know, like a higher power exists, but his transformation, it goes way beyond that. He recognizes that all his power, all his authority, it's all derived from God.
Right. It's not about him.
Yeah. It's about something way, way bigger.
Absolutely. And it's like he finally gets over himself. You know, it's all about him up until this point.
Right.
Which brings us to, I think, like a key theme in this whole story. Humility.
Okay, yeah.
Nebuchadnezzar's downfall. I mean, that was all about pride, wasn't it? That I built this, that I did that attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, his restoration, well, that comes from this place of surrender, this place of recognizing his own limitations and really acknowledging that, hey, his success, it wasn't all his doing.
So, like, what does that kind of humility look like for us today? I mean, we might not be building any empires, but I'm sure we all struggle with pride in, you know, our own ways.
I think it starts with just being honest with ourselves about where our gifts and abilities, where they really come from. Are they just the result of our own hard work? Or is there, you know, something more at play? Maybe a really supportive family, a stroke of luck, or even something that we can't even explain.
I like that. It's about, you know, recognizing that we're not self-made, that we're all just part of something so much larger than ourselves.
Yeah. And maybe, just maybe, letting go of that need to be in control. you know, that can actually lead to a deeper kind of strength.
Yeah. Like, it's that moment when you finally just stop trying to force things and you say, okay, I'm letting go. I trust that something bigger than me is at work here.
Exactly. And that's, I think, where real transformation can finally begin. It's in that space of, you know, surrender, that space of humility. It's where we open ourselves to, you know, new possibilities, a totally different way of seeing the world and our place in it.
So as we're wrapping up this deep dive, I'm left with, well, this sort of lingering question. What experiences in our own lives, you know, have kind of forced us to confront our own pride, you know, to finally let go of control, to really, truly acknowledge a power greater than ourselves? It might not be as dramatic as Nebuchadnezzar's story, but I'm willing to bet we all have those moments that have shaped us in, you know, really profound ways.
I think that's the real beauty of Nebuchadnezzar's story. It's not just about, you know, a king from like thousands of years ago. It's about something deeply human, something that, you know, resonates with all of us, no matter our backgrounds, no matter what we believe. It's this reminder that we're all capable of incredible arrogance and, well, profound humility.
Right.
And maybe, just maybe, that's where the real journey of transformation, well, maybe that's where it all begins.
That's a really powerful thought to end on. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into Daniel 4. We hope it's sparked some new insights and maybe even inspired you to keep exploring the depths of this, you know, ancient but timeless story. And until next time, keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.